ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. Today, I'm speaking with Colin Price, EVP and Global Managing Partner at Heidrick & Struggles, and also the author of Accelerating Performance, How Organizations Can Mobilize, Execute, Transform with Agility. His body of work around building organizational health, purpose, culture, leadership, and capabilities has defined this arena of study and practice. He's presented at many prestigious conferences, including the World Economic Forum and the Harvard Roundtable Series around the need to integrate thinking on organizational performance and health so that corporations can create an aligned high-performance system. His focus is on developing organizations that can align, execute, and renew better and quicker than competitors. Colin, thank you so much for joining us today. The entertainment industry is undergoing a real sea change right now, disruption to business models, changes in consumer behavior, new entrants, and all of this means that successful leaders need to be able to move their organizations forward quickly. And you've been working for years in the field of organizational change, and that's how we met years ago at Pricewaterhouse. And back then it was simply, you know, paradox principles and how change was constant, which seems really quaint right now, given how accelerated everything is. And you've just co-authored a new book, Accelerating Performance, How Organizations Can Mobilize, Execute, and Transform with Agility, that debuted at a private event in Davos for attendees of the World Economic Forum, which conveniently helps with just this thing. So given all that you've seen, can you tell us what sustained organizational success, how we get there? What does this mean?
It's a big question. Let me try and dissect at least some of it. So I think the starting position is to recognize that we don't know. We definitely don't know what the future is going to bring. Managers have forever been used to working with an uncertain future, but now they're working with an uncertain present. The geopolitical activities, the changes to currency fluctuations, the enormous changes to oil prices and steel prices, all of these things would have been difficult to predict in advance. So we're definitely living kind of at the end of the age of certainty. It's no longer that we can think of strategy as where am I today, where do I want to be in 3 years or 5 years, and when I get there, I'll be able to attack and defend from that position. It's just not a very helpful way to think about business anymore. So a different way to think about business is to, instead of thinking about sustainable competitive advantage, think about collapsing or reducing time to value. So we don't know where we want to be in 5 years' time, and we definitely don't know whether it would work or not. What we do know is if you lay out the imperatives of an organization in front of you, take cost out, develop a new channel, bring in 22 new people, change your brand, whatever those imperatives are, the lion's share of the reward for companies is going to companies that can get those things done quicker. I mean, it sounds incredibly simple or incredibly basic. It's actually a hard thing to do. Companies need to move quicker. So then you think, well, okay, why don't we move quicker? Why don't we reduce time to value? Why don't we get the 10 things on our agenda done in 6 months rather than 12 months? And right, there you get into the kind of horrible, difficult area of organizations, which is the people and cultural stuff. And organizations generally don't move at the pace required of them by the market. That's why, I mean, although you look at any organization today and it has an air of permanence and stability about it, of course, that's really a fallacy, because most of the organizations that we see operating in the market today won't be there in 5 years' time. In fact, just over 75% of them won't be there in 5 years' time. So organizations are very transient, actually, as it turns out, although that always takes us by surprise if we're in one of those organizations. So the market moves quickly, but organizations don't. The aggregate of organizations do, because one of them loses and disappears and another one pops up. But the job of a leader is to find a way in which they can operate at the right pace compared to their marketplace. in which they can move the metabolic rate of the organization forward at the appropriate pace. So then that takes you to the final thing I'll talk about in this little monologue, which is how do you improve the corporate metabolic rate of your organization? How do you get your organization to work twice as quick? So that's essentially what the research was about and the book was about. And the answer to that is still emerging. I think we have some very good data that tells us good hints on the answer. I think, to be honest, we'll know more in 10 years' time than we do today. But it comes down to three things. One, as always, people. You've got some people in your business who move with pace and positive aggression, and you've got other people who are off the pace. You need to have more of the first and less of the second, or you need to help the second become more like the first. The second one is processes. So you just look at content development or channel development or the sales motion or technology implementation or acquisitions. Those processes need to be as refined as possible and as developed as possible so that you can just move quicker than your competitors. And we looked at 1,700 companies, and when we asked the chief executives of those companies, how confident are you in the effectiveness of your processes, the average score was 1.8 on a 10 scale, on a 0 to 10 scale. So many, you know, most chief executives are not at all comfortable that the kind of blocking and tackling that their processes enable is at the right pace. So the first one is people, second one is processes. Third one is your kind of operating model. Even if you've got people inclined to move quickly and if you've got appropriately codified processes, the structure and mechanisms of the organization need to be designed for speed. They're not in most organizations. They're designed with too much complexity and too much optionality, too much, we might need to do this, so let's have a bit of a structure that allows us to do that. The winning organizations are taking a kind of radical view of simplicity.
All of these three characteristics, I have a couple of questions. The first, in terms of people, you know, positive aggression and at pace, is that something that you can train somebody to be, or is that really a characteristic and it's a matter of selecting the right talent? I mean, and how do you identify whether somebody has those skill sets? Is that something you can see ahead of time, or does it only materialize, whoa, that person is negative or not up to speed? And is it something that a skill set that somebody has that's consistent, or is it context related?
Yeah, great questions. And I wish the answer was, you know, one or the other. It's actually a mixture of those things. So we do know that you can test for this. You can measure the predisposition to move at pace in individuals. And so there is definitely a selection question. You can bring in people into your business that are more likely to move at pace or less likely. So that's certainly one lever you can pull. However, it's not appropriate to think some people just can't move at pace and never will do. You can develop people to move at pace. And underneath that development question is a basic idea, which is the business needs to value pace. So I know this is simplifying it, but if you think of a chief executive who behaves in the way of maybe not overtly saying this, but conveying it through their behavior, that if you get it wrong, you're in dreadful trouble. If you make a mistake, I'll kind of humiliate you in public. Those kind of behaviors inevitably produce a lack of pace in an organization.
Right.
If you just think, you know, think of a big organization, you know, do they value getting it right more than they value doing it fast? And for most organizations, it's the former. Now, not because people are stupid. I mean, the regulatory environment in some industries, the legislative and supervisory environment in other industries, has caused people to try and get it right at all costs. But that's the enemy of innovation. You need to be able to lean into failure and experiment and prototype in order to be able to move at pace, right? So the role modeling and the messages that the senior leadership provide can really help people shift their orientation from perfection to speed. That right. said, you know, if somebody's been used to working in a particular way for 35 years, it's maybe going to be quite difficult to get them to shift towards a more speed orientation in the final 2 years of their career. So there are some hard choices that need to be made in terms of, will this individual ever be able to move at that pace, or are they too ingrained in their habits to be able to do so?
Well, and I guess also you really, if it's all triggered and signaled by the chief executive, is the party that perhaps also needs to go somebody who's a stakeholder who isn't going to want to go? I mean, you know, you can say all sorts of things. I mean, I think one of the things is everybody can say this is what we need to do, but then they don't necessarily support it, so it doesn't flow through the organization. I also have a question on the processes and having those working. But if you're operating in a situation of change, don't those processes have to be fluid because you're changing so rapidly? Things are, I mean, where do you draw the line between having repeatable processes and systems? I mean, especially if you're dealing with tech systems that support these processes, how are you nimble and flexible, but also robust?
Yeah, there's a piece of language that we picked up from one of the companies we studied that I find helpful, which is the idea of signature processes. So if you take any company, you know, there'll be 500 different processes, from hiring people to paying people to dealing with contractors to budget processes, etc. So there's a whole panoply of these processes. But the argument goes that for any one company, there is a handful, let's just say five processes, which carry competitive advantage. Now, they're different in different industries. So, you know, in the media industry, content, well, it depends which part of the media industry, but content development is an absolutely crucial process. In the insurance industry, you know, if you get your risk analytics process wrong, you're toast. In the wealth right. management industry, relationship development and prospecting are the critical processes. So that out of the, let's just say 500, there are maybe five, probably big ones, that really, really matter. Of course, the other 495 should be as good as they can be, but that's not really the strategic question. The strategic question is, how do you get those five to be world-class? Now, embedded in your question is the answer, which is, of course, what world-class is today is not the same as what world-class will be in 2 years' time.
Right.
So you do need to keep refining them and do need to keep changing them. But if your primary focus is on five of them, you can do that. You know, you can have one of your senior team accountable for each of those five processes. And their job can be, in addition to their day job, driving continuous improvement on those processes so that you can stay ahead of the marketplace. So I think it's not impossible to do, but it does require, like most things, senior leaders to make a choice and to decide which few processes will be the ones that you really go to town on and which take complexity out of the organization and offer competitive advantage.
Right. Right. One of the other things you said, which I thought was interesting, was that there was too much
optionality.
Optionality. Okay. Now, that's really interesting because it seems like there's a lot of, you know, prepare for every, you know, everything, but you're saying, no, don't.
Is that right?
Yeah. You know, I think the days in which we can afford to prepare for everything are, you know, they're gone. I'm standing here in Canary Wharf in London looking out the window, and I'm in one client organization at the moment where we just concluded a piece of work where we were looking at their product set. And interestingly, the way in which they approached the rationalization of the product set was to get each product manager to send the chief executive a tweet, a 42-character tweet, about why do we have that proposition. Now, when we looked at those propositions, there were about 400 propositions in this particular organization. None of them were bad. They were all kind of good propositions, but we do not need 400. The old 80-20 rule applies, and we're getting 80% of the benefit from a small portion of them. So, in fact, they've decided to cut their product shelf by just over 50%. Now, when you do that, and obviously it's a kind of butter-clenching moment because you worry about elasticity, right? Are we going to lose half of our revenue if we lose half of our products? Well, they haven't. They've lost 6% of their revenue, but they've lost an awful lot more cost than that, and their EBITDA has gone up and their share price. So again, that's why I say choice matters, right? It's the easy option is to say we've got 400 products, let's have 401. Any revenue is better than no revenue. Well, not really, not anymore, right? Capital is priced at almost nothing around the world. You have to produce a return on capital better than your competitors. And that means being very choiceful about where you make those investments.
Wow. That really is a change. I think it just must be scary though, because it's your choice. If you make the wrong one, then you could lose, you know, a lot. I know that you have a tight window of time. Do we have a couple more minutes with you, or you have to leave?
I've got 1 minute.
You've got 1 minute. Okay. Well, if you have one thing to leave with people in large legacy organizations, what would you say the single most important thing that leaders should be doing is?
The power of doubt is what I would say. This is somewhat of a generalization, but I'm 58 years old. I remember when chief executives were the guy or gal that kind of knew the answer. I think, of course, there are still things that the senior leader needs to be very clear about: ethics, integrity, brand, etc. But now I'd say don't focus on that so much and focus on the power of doubt. So if you don't know which way your consumer marketplace is going, if you don't know why you're not attracting the right amount of talent, if you don't know what your competitors are likely to do next, that not knowing is the route to learning. And the more you can harness that doubt, the more that you can engage people in the organization in thinking hard about those questions rather than just executing, the more likely you are to be agile. Now, sounds kind of obvious, but many organizations, and in fact many leaders, are kind of programmed not to show vulnerability or weakness or doubt at any cost. And that kind of directive style just doesn't work in today's highly fluid environment. So kind of embrace that power of doubt. Kind of smile when you find a problem rather than frown when you find a problem, because in finding that problem, you may well find the answer.
Ah. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. If people want to find out more about your book, is it available on Amazon? Can people get it there?
It is. It's published by Wiley, and it's called Accelerating Performance by Colin Price and Sharon Toy, and it's on Amazon indeed.
Wonderful. And your firm, what's the website for your firm?
Heidrick & Struggles. You'll find little videos and a tool that you can use to self-diagnose how you're doing versus the kind of stuff I've talked about.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing some time with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you. Bye.
Nice to talk to you. Bye-bye. Well, we've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who have helped bring the program to life. First, the incomparable voice artist, my friend, Rob Naughton. Thank you. Our production team over at Microfame Media, a big thank you. And thank you to our guest and new friend, Colin Price. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.